pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. We do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the program. What you got to do, you got to text me. Let me know what is on your mind. Coming up on the program today, Jared Hudson. He's running for United States Senate. We'll obviously talk about Iran with him. That's coming up here in about a half hour or so. Paul DeMarco. We'll get caught up with some state politics. And I'm interested in his insights and thoughts on the internal Alabama Republican Party, what's going on there, some of the things that are being considered, closed primaries, a new chairman, what else needs to be on the agenda. He's a good resource for that. That's at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. And then at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour, Will Hampson, who's probably going to be our regular there for the time being. He's a vice president of P2 Public Affairs, a D.C.-based political firm. And, guys, the government shut down and no one notices, but I was thinking like, okay, we're, technically, I guess, maybe not officially at war with Iran, but you have these TSA agents not getting paid. You're going to have all of this DHS technically shut down at this war hysteria. Are we taking this a little lightly here? Imagine in 2003, if George W. Bush had decided to strike Iran and not having the TSA agents or whatever DHS agency not funded and not fully operational. So, and ICE is still funded regardless of whatever the Democrats are trying to promote. But we talked about this yesterday and some of you guys took issue with me not being 100% on the war effort here. But, that price of oil, we're going to feel it. If oil hits 90 bucks, then that's sort of the three-year $95. But I think oil prices are going to go up and you're going to feel it. It's going to be a shock to your system. And this is at a time when Trump needed the economy to do well, to really catch fire. And this is not going to do the trick. Basically, it's contingent on the Straits of Hormuz and shipping fears driving the price up. It's speculative. It's a speculative. Boy, do y'all remember those days? Oil speculators, we were wanting to run them out of town. Anyway, that was like part of during the Obama years. So higher gas prices, I they're on the way. We're going to feel it. And it's all, and you're going to get, I'm going to make a prediction here. Someone brought this up. You remember those stickers of Biden? I did that. Very Urkel. Well, wait till you start getting those with Trump with the higher gas prices. It's just, I don't know that we're going to get the rally around the flag moment that Trump is seeking here. I just don't know. It happened so suddenly. There was no buildup. There was no sort of, they didn't warm it up. There was no buildup. We'd been hearing it. I mean, there were reports that it wasn't like Bush and shock and awe and all of that. Now, Bush later regretted overhyping it, especially with the mission accomplished banner. Well, it's coming. Higher gas prices, that's going to be a shock to the economy. Have all kinds of unintended consequences. And we could sit here and talk about it, but I'm telling you, the average person out there not listening to this show is going to feel it. They're going to, who are they going to need to blame? They're going to blame Trump. He's already a target. So things are setting up to be a little rough. Democrats are going to go back to their anti-war footing, which, you know, y'all are right. There was none of this consternation over war powers resolutions or whatever when Biden and Obama launched missiles, engaged in warlike behavior in the Middle East. There wasn't even that when, maybe with the exception of Rand Paul or somebody, when Trump did it the first time during his first term. 251-343-0106. All that being said, is not necessarily a reason not to strike Iran. Not saying that, well, you don't want the price of gas to go up, so we should just let Iran build a nuclear weapon. No, not that at all. But there are consequences here that we have to take into account, whether you like it or not. So I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but this is just kind of part of the game. And you're going to have a Democrat machine paired with the media. It's like the Empire Strikes Back after the 2024 election. That's the way it feels to me. But they're going to be joined at the hip here, and they're going to make it more dramatic. Chris Murphy, you may even see a lot of AOC. You're going to see all these people really, really try to capitalize on what will be higher gas prices, I'm afraid, and maybe some other economic disruptions. Mortgages. What will the Fed do? 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You need to be in touch with the program. Let me know what is on your mind. We're heading into Saturday, and this is, you know, what everyone's talking about in my circles. A new Alabama Republican Party chairman, potentially, I guess. Joan Riddle's currently serving as the interim. But you got three candidates. Joan Reynolds, who's technically the vice chairwoman. John Merrill, our friend, we had him on a week ago, talk about what does the Alabama Republican Party really do in 2026. And Scott Stadhagen, who has been the center of a lot of dramas up in the State House, stepped aside, vacated the House Majority Leader role to go run for chairman. And it's not really clear who's going to be the next chairman. There's no real favorite. Well, I would say probably Joan Reynolds may be the favorite, but not a huge, overwhelming favorite. This is still wide open. We got that. There were also... our friend Ernie Yarborough has a closed primaries bill. This is certainly to generate a lot of discussion. Closing the Republican primary, closing the Democrat primary, where you have to be a registered with a party to participate. And the IDA is there. And it happens. Like I said, we have one instance in recent memory where we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that a Democrat swayed an election for a Republican primary candidate in Tom Watley's old Senate district, now occupied by Jay Hovey. Jay Hovey won it by the Republican primary by one vote after recounts and provisional ballots. And days later, you had a woman, a creative writing professor at Auburn University, pen an op-ed taking credit for it, saying she was a Democrat. She's always voted Democrat, but this time she was voting in Republican primary. And that's just the way it was. Dow Jones Industrial Average taking a plummet right now. It's down 1,148 points. All the major indexes are down. Now, this might be just the oil prices and bond yields going up are weighing down the markets. That's according to CNBC. Sometimes reliable. But all the major indexes, S&P 500's down, NASDAQ's down 2% and some change, which is significant. Now, we saw a 1,000-point drop in the Dow. Doesn't mean what it used to mean. Everything's so inflated now. That's still kind of a shock. Maybe look for some buying opportunities here. I bet oil stocks are probably going up. This is not the, like I said, this is not the precursor to what Trump needs or what Republicans need for a successful midterm election. Right now, it's just going to be damage control. And that's, you know, hopefully this is a 2 or 3 day thing. But Iran, this is how Iran has any chance up against the U.S. and Israel is by disrupting the oil market. That's their only play here. They don't really have much. Now, I guess Trump is trying to wipe out their Navy. That was like an objective, and now it makes sense. Why would you do that? You take out their Navy, and then they're not threatening shipping and the Persian Gulf there and the Strait of Hormuz. Yeah, take out the Air Force, but this is their only play, is to disrupt the global oil market with the hope of, this is going to be almost immediate. These retailers are not going to wait around to raise the price of gas. So I'd say fill up today. That's another recommendation. It was already up at one place like 50 cents a gallon for the regular unleaded in Fairhope. But it seems like it's up probably a whole lot more now. Dow's going down. That's not good news either. And while we appear to be winning and overwhelmingly owning the Iranians, they got to figure out a way to keep those shipping lanes protected at all costs. 251-343-0106. We get some of your texts on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Get on down to Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Birmingham. Montgomery. Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. 06. Jared Hudson coming up here in a few minutes, so stick around for that. A named Texter. You are steadily becoming a Democrat. You're more worried about short-term oil prices and not giving smoke signals to the public in Iran! Exclamation point. That attack was forthcoming. I guess the deputy Ayatollah is listening to the Jeff Poor show for pointers about how he is impacting the American public. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you everything's fine. I don't know what you want to hear from me. He said the Dow Jones Industrial Average is tanking right now. The price of oil is going to go up. It's going to be a shock to the system. Trump needed an economic boom in the short term. And short term matters. You could talk about short term oil prices all you want, but short term matters. With an election around the corner. That's the problem. Maybe by 2027, everything will be fine and the world will be a better place. People vote November 2026. It is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. What are we supposed to do here? Do you think the public, and you guys who are big Trump supporters, do you think that the average voter is going to consider the circumstances that may await them a year from now? Are they going to look at their current situation and vote accordingly? That is how the world works. I'm sorry to break that to you, but I am not becoming a Democrat. Mike, the logical conclusion of I like to take showers too much to be a Democrat. Mike writes, the logical conclusion of this line of reasoning that approves Iran attacks is that a strike around the globe is justified because the target might one day reach a point where a strike could be justified. Listen, the intelligence tells us that they were moving their production into a place that would not have been reachable by a modern, bunker buster type of munition. That's I watch in Fox News and I know all the talking points. That's one of them. That they had to act now or it would have been out of reach. That's what they're telling us. However, if you want to put faith in the deep state and the intelligence community, you go right ahead until another Hunter Biden laptop comes along or another Russia collusion hoax comes along. And then you can say that they're lying. Hey, Jeff, this is Billy D. I think one of the things a lot of people aren't talking about is the fact that that strait is littered with mines that are the equivalent of like a drone. They're not like the old mines of World War II that you've seen. They're different. I think there's a story there. You're going to start to hear about it probably in a week. Interesting. Ultra Runner. Short-term pain, long-term gain. Two superpowers are waging war. Let's compare Iran. It's triple the size of Ukraine with double the GDP and population. Iran leads in drone and missile production. Trump's success so far is astonishing. Putin is stalemated, and Mother Russia has lost 1.2 million sons. Comparable adversaries, vastly different outcomes. Are you surprised by Trump's success so far? No, I think American military might is second to none, and maybe we don't like some of the social engineering at the Pentagon, but we do have the best. That's why everybody buys from U.S. defense contractors. I'm not surprised. Dan, first, I appreciate the fact you take positions with which I disagree. Second, I think the fact that this might hurt Trump, but he did it anyway is telling about its necessity. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Sitting right here at the floor of Bama.
At the floor of Bama. I fly a starship across the universe. course divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Text line 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, text me real quickly. I want here. Hey, Jeff, you can bet once this campaign is over, Trump will not leave $8 to $10 billion worth of military equipment over there. I suspect you're right. I don't think we're going to invade Iran and have $8 to $10 billion worth of military equipment to leave there, but nonetheless, you're still right with that statement. Joining us here on the line, he's a candidate for United States Senate. I'm becoming a regular on the program, but we're appreciative of his insights. Jared Hudson joins us. Jared, how are you?
Doing good, brother. How you doing, big hero?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it. So how's the campaign going?
Oh, man, it's going great. It's full tilt, going all over this state, meeting folks, and, just playing the game, man. And by playing the game, I mean just shaking hands and winning folks over because they really resonate with our message. So it's been really cool to meet people all over Alabama. And the more we travel across it, the smaller the state gets, because literally everywhere I go, somebody knows somebody that I know. Somebody is friends with a cousin from somewhere. Heck, I found people that I didn't even know we were related to that somehow we have distant relatives that are related. So it's just been really cool.
Well, now the topic has changed, or at least, I imagine you probably got a lot of questions about immigration and things like that. That's just kind of the way it has been. But right now, I guess the news cycle's disrupted, and here we are. What do you make of these early days of this Iran military campaign? Any thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, and really quickly before I mention that for 2 seconds, you mentioned immigration. I mean, look at the attack in Austin, the terrorist attack in Austin, Texas, a couple days ago or 2 days ago now. After we rocketed Iran for that first night, that's something that we need to look at just on the legal immigration side. You know, I believe that because of where we're at right now, pausing immigration from a lot of these third world, or even if it's not third world, if it's one of these, I believe it's like an LDC country, if it's one of these countries that have individuals that we cannot vet, it's important, and probably more important, on who we're bringing in right now, even as opposed to how they get here, if that makes sense. So I think that that's part of what we're seeing also with this attack on Iran. With that being said, I think if there was ever a time to do it, now was the time, because the Iranian regime was folding under the onslaught of its people. I mean, when you have, 90 to 100 million people in a country and 80-ish million of those folks, maybe even a little more than that, that are against the current regime, if you're going to topple that regime, now is the time to do it. And the way we're doing it is the right way when it comes to the initiative. Taken out the leaders. Had we not killed the Ayatollah and been able to confirm that he was dead a couple of days ago, I think we'd be having a different conversation. But the simple fact that we capped that dude, and then we've capped a long list of his leaders. I believe Israel just shot a rocket into that council that was convening the other day. That was just passed to me before I got on the radio show with you. So the fact of the matter is taking out the leadership of this regime is of the utmost importance, because as soon as we do that, we've circled the wagons, we're protecting our people and all our bases overseas as best we can. And when that's done, them standing up a new regime, a Persian regime, not the same thing that has been there since for my whole adult life, right? Since 1989 with the Ayatollah that we just killed, took over. So, being able to see a regime that is going to be with the U.S. is important. The last thing I'll leave you with, something that's just really cool, is the ships that we launched some of these suicide drones from were built right here in Mobile, Alabama. So how about that? How about the fact that we are adding to the greatness of the United States of America in supporting this initiative? So on the other side, as long as we don't get these clowns in Congress that are you know, neocons that want the forever wars. We can't turn this into GWAT. And I believe there's an administration who won't do that and won't leave $8 to $10 billion worth of equipment behind, put a lot of our blood on the sands of a Middle Eastern country. I believe that that this administration is the one who's going to be able to get it done. We just have to make sure that we support them as they continue to trek through this. Last thing I'll give you, this was the first time that those were used in combat, by the way, those literal combat ships from Mobile. So, really cool.
Well, tell me, I guess some of the unintended consequences here, there's some economic headwinds, at least in the short term, and I don't know what the strategy is here, but my hope or I think the wisdom would be to wrap this up as soon as possible. I mean, is that where do you go from here? How long does this need to go? And then do we start to see things kind of normalize?
Well, one, yeah, I think we do see things start to normalize. I mean, right now, just with what just happened, you're going to have a volatility spike in the markets. That's kind of what you're talking about that we're seeing. And that's probably over the next week or so. The biggest goal was to get in and get out. We're partnered as a strike force with the Israelis right now. They've been doing a lot of stuff, and they have probably longer than 40 years of espionage going on in Iran as we speak. And so that's why we're able to target a lot of these leaders. They're going to continue doing that and making sure that we maintain good relationships with our Middle Eastern partners so that a country can be set up without us going boots on the ground. We get in, we drop the hammer, we kill the bad guys, we get out, and we protect our people and our money. And when you do that, yes, there's going to be a volatility spike, but I do believe you're going to see things start to stabilize after a couple of weeks. I think it was, Cyprus was hit the other day, but we've had other Gulf and European partners that have stepped in since we've seen some of the retaliatory attacks from Iran. And when you have the world partnered against a very evil regime, I think that takes the burden off of us in the United States of America. Once again, as long as these bootlicking neocons that are in Congress don't get involved and turn this into the war that I fought in, the global war on terror, and make it more about their access, their bottom line, what they can receive, as opposed to protecting American sovereignty, our American way of life, and our partners in the Middle East.
Well, and you bring that up, and maybe it's not just one place. Maybe the theater isn't just Iran, but could you see similar things going on as the Trump administration continues on down the road? Speaking of neocons, Lindsey Graham talking about Cuba's next. That's very aggressive rhetoric from some members of Congress.
No, that's right. And you got a bunch of people like Lindsey Graham ain't ever been in a fist fight, much less a gunfight. You know, he doesn't know the real cost. So making sure that when we do these things, we get in, we get out, we support our partners, but more importantly, we support American sovereignty and protect our nation and our people. And part of protecting our nation and our people is not letting these politicians that have been there for their entire lives spill the blood of our kids on the sands of a Middle Eastern country or on the beaches of Cuba or in the jungles down, wherever it is. We do not need to be boots on the ground everywhere we go. It is not for us to be the world police. However, because we are so interconnected, the world, it is for us to make sure that we maintain solid partnerships that protect our sovereignty and protect the sovereignty of our partners. And I think that's good for our economy and for everything as a whole, right? And anytime you see things like this, you will see some initial, volatility spikes.
Well, let's talk about back to Iran. What's next? I mean, obviously, they'll figure it out, I guess. It's not really up to the West to try to install a government. We've been down that road before, historically. What do you think the outlook is there?
Well, I know without going into it, because I do have buddies that are working there now, I do know that the Israelis have been working and have a plan to help with that. I know that the president has met with the Kurds, or our administration, I say the president, he was talking about those. I know that we've met with the Kurds and the Kurdish forces that we fought with, and we did the same thing in Syria. Now we're even using Syrian airspace, right? Now, the guy that took over was formerly a terrorist, which is terrible, but at the same time, he is supporting U.S.-based initiatives over there, and we're not involved in Syria. You look at Syria now and kind of what that process has turned into. So with that being said, I think as we move forward, we continue to tap these leaders. Once we get that knocked out, I believe that we have good enough partnerships, and we've shown American strength in a way that they're going to be like, yep, they mean business. We're not going to get involved. China did the same thing. We hit Venezuela, snatched Maduro. We took down some Russian oil ships, all on a court order. Now we tap this guy in Iran, and China's sitting back like, whoa, whoa, wait a second. We hadn't heard hide nor hair from them. And I think the same thing would happen with Cuba in our hemisphere. They're like, all right, well, they ain't messing around. So this is that peace through strength mentality. Peace through strength doesn't mean that you just show up and say, hey, I'm going to hit you if you don't do what we say. No, it means that you actually hit them when you have to hit them. And that's what we did. And now everybody knows we mean business. And so when you look at Iran, their partners with China, China's weakened by this. Well, that's unbelievably important, not just for us militarily, but also economically. So,
well, and so, are we talking years here? I mean, what do you think? And is there a possible kind of impact to the entire region as a whole? It does seem like we're currently aligned with our, you know, when it comes to Iran. That Israel and Saudi Arabia are aligned against a common enemy here, which is somewhat unusual.
Well, no, I mean, the Saudis have been partners for a long time, and they've been saying that. I mean, the same thing they say about Israel, and they're right there beside Iran. And so with that being said, they're like, hey, they're just as likely to shoot us with a nuke as they are the Israelis. Why in the world did you send them however many millions of dollars that Obama sent them in pallets of cash to do their nuclear program? And so the Saudis were pissed about that. And if you remember the October 7th attacks in Israel, right before that, there was a meeting for the Saudis to be able to get access to nuclear technology and going through that process, because they're like, hey, we got to protect ourselves. So this isn't something that's an unusual partnership. The Israelis, the Saudis, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, all of these people are partners in this region because they all live right by each other. And just so you know, I mean, the distance between, you know, Tehran and Tel Aviv is like from where we're sitting out in Alabama to El Paso, Texas. So it's within driving distance for us. I mean, it's not super far away, right? The fact of the matter is we've got good partners there that we can trust to do what they need to do in that area. They need a little bit of help on the front end. The president said, hey, about 4 weeks of tapping these leaders and making sure that we kill everybody else so that we can stand up a Persian republic or a Persian regime that is not that Ayatollah regime, that Iranian regime that has been there, like I said, for the duration of my adult life. I'm 40 years old, and I never remember a time where there wasn't an Iranian terroristic regime funding Hezbollah, funding Hamas, funding all of these terrorist fighters that killed my buddies during GWAT, building IEDs that were killing my buddies in Iraq, and even going back to just a couple of years ago in the Biden administration, I lost two buddies of mine died. I'd done training with them the summer before, pistol carbine training. Two buddies of mine died taking down a ship when the ladder broke that they were climbing to take down a ship of Houthi fighters that are funded by the Iranians. So we're taking those out, and it definitely impacts American interest. But do I think we're going to be there for a long time? No, if we continue to do it the right way, which I believe they're doing right now, I think within a month or less, we're going to have knocked out everything we need to knock out for our partners in the Middle East that we trust, our trusted partners, to stand up something that's going to benefit, obviously, the country of Iran, but for us, even more importantly, the sovereignty of our nation and our partners overseas.
Joined by Jared Hudson for just a couple more minutes. He's running for United States Senate here in Alabama. One of the things, and you know, one of my takeaways from just watching the news, it does seem, now I know they've always been a partner and they've always helped the U.S. in these sort of circumstances, but the Israelis really seem like they are more active in this military engagement than maybe in some of the past.
Well, it's because the Israelis have been active in this very specific military engagement for 40 years or longer. I mean, this is what they have worked. They have infiltrated the Iranian regime in an unbelievable way. They've gone after the Hezbollah terrorists. I mean, you even notice, the issues in the Levant and even further north, right? They've been dealing with that regularly. I mean, they're the size of New Jersey, so they're constantly protecting themselves from rocket barrages. Tornadoes for us in Alabama is like a rocket barrage for the Israelis. So they have actively been at this. They're actively prepared for war at all times, and they're actively running espionage and infiltrating regimes like the Iranian regime, and they've been doing it for longer than we were fighting even in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, during the whole global war on terror. So they've been doing it for a long time. This is just the culmination of that because the timing was right. And the reason the timing is right, China's on its heels. China's weakened. You look at the Maduro raid. Okay, American strength might be back. It's looking good. Earlier last year, we knocked out the nuclear payloads that they were moving around the country. Okay, so we've got some support here. They're not going to be giving these guys a bunch of cash. Let's pull the trigger and let's move on this, and that's what we see happening. American greatness is back. We have a bunch of leaders that are not trying to lead men to war in dresses. We've got real men like Secretary of War Pete Hegseth that say, hey, when we do this, drop the hammer, boys. Full tilt. They call death to America. Death's coming from America.
Last question real quick. We'll get you out of here. The Strait of Hormuz, securing that, obviously we're seeing some fears in the markets. What needs to happen there to keep the Iranians from disrupting the global markets?
I mean, I think continuing what we're doing. I mean, obviously, anything like what we've done will create spikes in volatility, like I talked about earlier. Continue what we're doing and wipe those leaders out. Don't let them stand up an Iranian regime that's similar to what we've seen. But let's see Persian greatness come back like was before I was even born, right? That probably a lot of the listeners remember. I mean, you can look at pictures of it even 10 years before the Ayatollah we just killed took over. Bring that back, and that is going to create some stability because stability creates affordability. Chaos creates unaffordability because everybody's uncertain what's going to go on. So continuing what we're doing and making sure that we drop the hammer, drop it now, and then hand it over to our partners to stand up so a more nefarious actor doesn't stand up in the vacuum. Lastly, I spent a good bit of time in the Straits doing anti-piracy stuff, also doing sniper overwatches over Iranian vessels. Probably one of the sketchiest things I did in my career. They're pointing RPGs and Dishkas at our helo, and I'm sitting here pointing my sniper gun out at them as we're flying around. Controlling the Straits is going to be unbelievably important, so continuing to maintain that presence until we knock out this regime, and it's going to be how we're able to decrease volatility.
Jared, we always appreciate your time. Folks want to find out more about your campaign. Where can they look?
Yeah, HudsonForAlabama.com. Like, share, follow, check us out. Hopefully we earned your support, and we need your vote on May 19th so we can send a warrior to Washington.
Jared Hudson, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Somehow on and on. He asked me how I bought it. I told him on credit. Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. He said some things just glitter and shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Tuesday morning, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. You may be mad at me because I am not out there trumpeting the Toby Keith war anthem, waving the American flag and the Trump flag simultaneously. But I continue to be skeptical of this. I'm hoping that it wraps up soon. That this is will be a positive. I'm not going to go full Tucker Carlson on you here and say this is World War III and that we're all stooges of Israel, but I do think we've strayed a little bit for probably what a lot of people had wanted. Especially if you have draft age sons and things like that. It's just, I don't, but I hear from people who do. My hope here is that, you know, Trump's a very smart guy. He sees what's going on in the world. He is privy to things you and I aren't privy to, and he is acting based on that. That this really was, this wasn't opportunism. He wasn't being misled by the deep state. He wasn't being misled by the military-industrial complex because we need to manufacture more weapons. None of that. And my hope that this is done because it was necessary and justified. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. We'll get to your text on the other side. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Excuse me, man, but where's the door?
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number two is now underway. 251-343-0106. We'll get to your text here shortly. We got a bunch to get to. I promise I will. Don't get sad out there. If you don't get your text read right away, it just takes time to get through them. So come on the program, Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs. He's a vice president there. We'll talk about the political implications, which I think are profound on this Iran stuff if it goes more than a month. So we'll talk to him about that and where he sees things, especially as the midterms approach. A little different than the last time around when we talked to him. Joining us now on the line, he's a good friend of the program, always willing to come on when needed. But Paul DeMarco, you can read him, his columns, Trussell Tribune, some other places. But Paul, how are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Hoping your listeners are well today.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. We do appreciate it. Well, I wanted to get you on it. Just kind of get your thoughts on some things going on here and, you know, maybe overshadowed somewhat. We got a Republican Party leadership change coming down the pike. What are you hearing there? And I asked this, I guess Merrill's only one of the three who's made time to come on this show. Like, what do you foresee the Alabama Republican Party as in 2026 and beyond?
Well, you're right. I think everybody is talking about what's going on in Iran and Washington, D.C., and it is completely overshadowed. Any talk, it seemed like 3 weeks ago, all we were talking about was, what was going on at the State House Republican Party, and now it's 100% what's going on overseas. But you're right. There is an election this weekend. The Republican Party is meeting. And I think folks are saying, where are we headed? Where is the party headed? But look at where the legislature is. And, they're talking about the party votes, just, you know, party votes and some of the other legislation they're passing. So I think everyone, I guess, when it comes to party leadership says, hey, we just want the legislature to reflect the voters of Alabama. That is a conservative state, and I think you've seen it, and you're going to, no question, see it when you see Senator Tuberville as Governor Tuberville.
Well, tell me, let's talk about the big issue in this realm, and I don't know how you feel about it, closing primaries. I'm led to believe that it is a big deal for Republicans and rank and file. I mean, is this something that's just sort of long overdue that we need to do here with closing our primaries and having some kind of system where you identify as a Republican, you vote the Republican primary?
Well, look, we can talk about the history of elections in Alabama, Baxley versus Graddick, right? And,
right.
Different elections where they said, go vote in this. And maybe it's where you live. I mean, a place like a Jefferson County, maybe it is it more important in a place like this, or less important than in some rural county that is, you know, I've been in Limestone County, which is pretty Republican, isn't it?
Right.
Pretty reliably Republican. In Baldwin County, where you live, pretty reliably Republican. So do you see it being more of an issue in a Jefferson County or a Mobile or something? I don't know, but it's definitely something that has been talked about for a long time. It looks like it's going to happen. You know, will it happen this session? And what do we got? 14 legislative days left,
right?
Or so. You know, there is time to get it passed if the leadership wants to see it passed. And I guess they've talked about it and it's been introduced, I believe, or it's about to be introduced.
Well, I think where we really see it, where you really need it. And we talk about the Whatley seat. That was one example there. Lee County, but Lee County, Tuscaloosa County, Madison County, where you have this demographic shift and you do have, it's still an overwhelming Republican county, but you're starting to see a growth in numbers among Democrats. And in some places of Tuscaloosa County, you know, you would vote in the Democrat primary, but Lee County, Madison County, where the county's still run by Republicans, Democrats can really make a big difference locally. So, I you know, just keeping that in mind, maybe it seems like there are some shifts here that would lead one to think that this it is a necessity.
Yeah, I do. And like I said, I know when I was party chairman in Jefferson County, we talked about, you know, getting out Republican voters and, you know, especially when you have some of these runoffs and different issues. So it has been talked about for a long time, and it looks like it's going to finally happen. And I think folks say, okay, look, that's one of the issues that we wanted to see get done as a party. Maybe not necessarily the public is out there crying for it, but I think the party did. So if that happens, I think everybody can say, okay, look, this is something that was wanted, and the legislature turned around and got it done. The majority, GOP supermajority, got it done.
Yeah, well, you think it sounds like it's going to happen in the House. I just wonder what the prospects are in the Senate, because you know how the Senate operates upstairs. It seems like they have a piece. I don't know how fragile it is, but throwing in something here at the last minute, and maybe I'm not saying that they shouldn't do it. This is not a reason, but does that deter Senate support for it? And I mean, you know, that's what you're going to need for it to happen.
Well, look, nobody, no lawmaker, whether you're a state representative or senator, I've been there, wants to be surprised with any last minute. Like you're trying to pull something off at the last minute. You're trying to ram it through. I don't really see this has been talked about for a while. Plus, I just don't know if a state senator voted for it, are they going to get a lot of pushback from their constituents? There might be like, can you hear me?
Well, yeah. Well, I was going to, like, so we know at least one Senate seat with Jay Hovey, who owes a Senate seat to a Democrat. He wins the primary by one vote, and then you have that New York Times op-ed from the Democrat taking credit for it. I mean, we know at least one circumstance where it mattered. Are you going to have a bunch of Jay Hoveys who will stand up in a closed door caucus and say, "Hey, I don't think this is a good idea"?
Well, you know, the pro tem has got to have this conversation with everyone, and I think the speaker would have a conversation with the pro tem and say, you know, you've got a supermajority. This isn't a thin margin here, and you know where there are issues, and is there a disconnect between the you talked about the state party and legislators on this issue? I don't know, because there's just not been a ton of talk about it. All of a sudden, it's outside of, you know, political. But we're going to see where the legislature is. I'm going to just take it a step further, if it's okay, Jeff, is come June, and when the Supreme Court, if the Supreme Court rules on this redistricting, how far does the Alabama legislature take this redistricting? I think we know where members of the state party would be, is say, look in Virginia, where they're going to go from a 5-4, is it 5-4 Democrat Republican majority to a 10-1, or was it something of that nature, where they're going to have one Republican? I think folks say, well, that's what they're doing in those states. What are you going to do when it comes to redistricting in Alabama? And will the legislature reflect that and say, yeah, we agree. We're going to do what they're doing in those other states. So I think that's even candidly a better question than this party question, which I do think is important. But that obviously, when it comes to redistricting, not only at the congressional level, will they also fall suit with the Alabama State Senate and the Alabama House of Representatives, where we've seen some redistricting as well. I think that's as important an issue and really a harbinger of where we're going as much as this party registration.
Let me ask you this, and I don't have a real good sense of this at all, but you hear it and people talk about it. So we all know about the leaked audio and what Speaker Ledbetter said. Is Speaker Ledbetter under any threat to lose his standing in the Alabama Republican Party and possibly get removed from the ballot? I like I said, people are talking about it. I tend to dismiss it, but I've been surprised in the past.
I don't see that happening. I think the meeting will happen. The focus will be on the next chair of the party. And, you know, you have some folks talking about it. But I don't think that's going to be the overwhelming issue at the party. I think, and he's talked about this party registration that's important. So I don't see that being an issue. Or let me say this. Anybody can bring up anything, but I don't think that's going to happen this weekend.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of talk about it, but I'm not even sure how that would work in theory. But it does seem to be something the speaker is a little, at most, mildly concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, clearly a couple of weeks ago there was a lot more talk about it, and you know, the timing of when that occurred in this meeting. But I think you're going to come out of this meeting this weekend with the chair some resolutions about where the you know, party wants to see the legislature and national, and then kind of move on. And everybody's going to be focused on these elections. I mean, we got to remember, May 19th is around the corner, and we've got some very important party primaries in the Republican Party. As a matter of fact, if you kind of look, this is some of the most competitive races. Of course, it'll go into a runoff in June, and I mean, I think that's where we all need to be focused 100% on who are we going to put to represent us in all these seats. That needs to be the real focus once we get past this weekend.
Joined by Paul DeMarco here on the program. And then we got primaries coming up in May and then a runoff after that. I guess the one thing I'm really surprised about, and even if you look at some of the pollings, we still have a lot of undecided voters out there in these primaries. And then I expect that to start breaking, but it is later than usual.
You know, you really haven't seen as much of the advertisements as I mean, it's March, and I thought with, you know, almost 60 days, we'd see more of it. But I'll tell you, Jeff, you know, you usually see one or two runoffs. I mean, the runoff this year, we could see, you know, five runoffs. I mean, I think this will be the most runoff. I guess you do a lot of due diligence on history. Will this be the most number of statewide runoffs we've ever had in the history of the state of Alabama? To me, it's got to be. I mean, there's just so many of these races are so competitive. I just don't see a lot of folks getting 50% plus one. And usually you go to the runoff and have maybe one vote. I think we'll have a lot to vote on come June when we have these runoffs, Jeff.
Yeah, I agree. Well, what do you think turnout looks like? Because that's where this matters. We talk about closing the primaries. You already have low turnout, but the problem is with low turnout, every vote matters, and every vote matters means that Democrats could come in and really play spoiler in some cases. But the turnout here, to me, is it's hard to gauge the public's interest in this at this time.
Are you talking about both May and June? Because June is always the hard. I mean, when you have a runoff in the summer when everybody's traveling here and there, that's what you worry about, is those numbers. But if you're a candidate, you know, it's always about getting your people out. But when it's a statewide race, I do think people are going to be paying attention, because I think come the 1st of May, the airwaves are just going to be saturated with so many TV commercials. And it may be all the candidates, you know, they're holding off until really about 3 weeks before that election. They want to get past spring break. in the end of March, and then come Easter, mid-April, and then that's when you'll start seeing a lot of TV. Billboards will be coming up. So I really do think there's no question people are going to be paying attention. They're not going to have any choice but to pay attention come the 1st of May.
Yeah, and they'll be paying attention. Just, like I said, it's a matter of getting people to get out and vote. And, you know, you wonder if we're looking at high teens again or something different. I also wonder about this, Paul. And, you know, you're in the Birmingham market. We could see at any moment in time, would Clint for Growth come in and just, you know, they play hard, right? You don't want to be on their bad side. And that sort of, I guess, would work for Barry Moore. They backed him. If you're going to start seeing some attack ads and things of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, so far, most of the ads I've seen have been on social media. It's a lot cheaper.
The
digital ads. And I've seen one or two mail flyers out there, but really the radio and TV is coming. I think after spring break, maybe after for Easter, and you'll just start, and you'll see, like I said, some of the outside groups coming in. But really, these candidates have been raising. I mean, you look at the disclosure reports, you know, look at the amount of money in the attorney general's race. You're going to start really seeing that money start being laid out to solicit voters. The candidates are out there. I mean, I've been to a bunch of different meetings and seen the candidates out there, but really, you know, your listeners who listen to your show every day, they're going to start hearing the radio ads and start seeing the TV ads probably, I would think, within the next 30 to 45 days.
Last question real quick. We'll get you out of here on this. And, the municipal elections were – there were a few of the incumbents who went down around the state. I guess in your area, the big one would be Hoover. Do you get the sense we're in an anti-incumbent – at least there'll be a handful of incumbents go down to some of these legislative seats. I know a lot of them got challengers, but I don't know that we're necessarily there yet, but that seems to me to be some of the scuttlebutt trying to base it off of last year's municipal elections.
Yeah, I mean, look, you always see one here or there and incumbent that does lose. And, you and I could look at a couple of races, say these are going to be pretty close. But I do think people are paying attention. They really are paying attention to what's going on, and they should be paying attention. You know, you get frustrated about what's going on in Montgomery or City Hall. You should pay attention. And so hopefully voters are paying attention more than ever.
Paul, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on, and we'll do it again soon.
Thank you. Look forward to talking to you again.
Paul DeMarco, ladies and gentlemen, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us. We will indeed be in Montgomery tomorrow, and I just haven't confirmed. We're going to broadcast from the Lieutenant Governor's office. Getting to do that. Will Ainsworth, very kind to put us up. Really, we're kind of a refugee right now since the departure of Scott Stadhagen. Paul Lee, the new majority leader. I don't think he's crazy about the radio show being there every week. So I have been very careful with that, and we have moved our base of operations for now. Should be up on the Senate floor next week. Then I don't know what we're going to do beyond that, but hopefully by then session will be winding down. I know there's a week off somewhere in there, too, that will come into play, but we're going to we're going to see if we make it to the very, very end, which cannot come soon enough. This has been what was supposed to be a very, very easy legislative session, and it's been a very hard one. And I imagine a lot of you just really aren't necessarily even focused on that. A new texter. Good morning, Jeff. Oh, this is a long one. We may save this for the other side. Damn Yankee. Lindsey Graham is a unicorn. They should really stop putting him on Fox News. He's on Fox News. Let me tell you this, Damn Yankee. He's on Fox News every night, and he says the craziest stuff. So my job, I'm also an editor at Breitbart News. My job is to monitor. I have three employees. Well, I'm one of them. I have two other employees who work for me, and their job is to monitor the different cable channels. I have Fox News. They have MSNBC and CNN, and the most outrageous clips here in the last 5 days or so have been from Lindsey Graham. It's just astounding. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Will Hampson coming up in the next hour, so stick around for that. In the meantime, your text 251-343-0106. Good morning, Jeff. I've been listening to your thoughts, and I agree with most of what you have said, but should every decision be based on what effect it will have on the election? I think it's great that we finally have an administration that's concerned about the country. I'm on Social Security. It's my only income, so higher prices are not music to my ears. But the Communist Party showed clearly in the State of the Union that they have no interest in protecting the citizens of this country. If the refusal for that stand doesn't wake people up, we're lost anyway. Maybe it makes me glad I'm old. We should be glad President Trump is not just another lily-livered, linguine-spine politician. Better to have this fight in their house than ours. Keep up the great work, Dale and Fairhope. Yeah, well, I'm not saying you shouldn't do something or should do something based on the politics. But my hope here, Dale, is just to point out that there will be political implications. That these events do matter to the politics. And you're right. Like, you know, if people don't see what happened during the State of the Union and react to that, then, you know, maybe we are lost. But I don't know I would hedge the entire political future of the country on you know, Democrat refusals to stand. And would the public react to that or not? I think people, when they go vote, probably didn't watch the State of the Union address. I need to just evaluate their current circumstances individually. And this is going to have an impact. And we need to be aware of that impact. We cannot just sit here and just cheerlead everything. It's just not honest. I mean, you want that? Go watch cable news, depending on your political persuasion. Whatever, go do that if that's what you want. If you just want confirmation of your bias, fine. But I'll tell you where I'm coming from. I want Republicans in charge, okay? I want Republicans to expand their majority in the House. But I'm telling you, this is going to hinder that, especially if gas prices go up, if interest rates on mortgages increase, whatever these is the overused phrase, kitchen table issues are impacted, and I believe they will be, then that is something that we need to be aware of and need to take into consideration. Does it negate the validity? Does it negate the justification of the action? No. but it is a consequence, and it has to be a part of the discussion whether it offends your sensibilities or not. See here, Paul writes, he's got a lot to say here. China was weakened with Venezuela. It was billions, not millions, that Obama sent to Iran. And says, I think a lot of this chess match, this is a chess match against BRICS. So that's what, Brazil, Russia, India, China, those developing nations. Mommy issue. So Whiskey Pete and Captain Bonespurs haven't said what happens next. As a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan, we lost. We didn't win anything. All we did was to rebuild them after destroying them with thousands of American troops, some mental health issues from it, with over 151,000 vets to kill themselves. Well, I'm going to disagree with that. I think you did take away a potential threat with Afghanistan. With Iraq, that's a harder one. Do we really think that Saddam Hussein was ever this guy who was capable of a 9/11 sort of event? Now, we were told that he was, but was he? Did he have chemical weapons that he was going to unleash on the Israeli people? Was he trying to procure a nuclear weapon? Was he trying to do all of this? And was that a real threat to the West? So, maybe not. Certainly with Afghanistan, something had to be done. And I think you've taken away that threat for the foreseeable future. It's just the outcome was not as desirable. Never bought into this notion that you could do this and create Western democracies in these countries. It's a different culture. We're not the same. That's the problem. This is sort of a leftist notion that if you give people democracy, if you give people the right of self-governance, self-determination, all of that, they're going to go in the same direction as the U.S., Britain, France, whatever. And that's just not true. They have a different set of values. They have different religions. The religion is such a big deal. They're just going to vote. The people there will vote in their religious leaders. It's a theocracy. You wind up with a theocracy. And we need to understand that. And I don't think the left says, well, if you build it, they will come. And we'll just have, Capitol Hill at Tehran. And it's just not going to be the way it is. There's a reason why the regime that's ruled Iran for the last 40 years was ruling Iran for the last 40 years. It's what the people wanted. They want that kind of structure. They want that kind of civil society. It seems so foreign to the average American. It seems crazy. But they live a different life. We're not all the same. We're not just people on a sheet of paper. Everybody has a different view of the world based on their culture. And as a system of government, a form of government that would have pro-U.S. leanings and an overwhelmingly Islamic country is yet to be invented. I mean, do you think, even in maybe the exception of Kuwait, do you think the U.S. is as beloved as we are led to believe in Saudi Arabia? In some of these Gulf states, I think maybe we're not the great Satan, but it's not post-World War II Europe either, Western Europe. On a texture, Jeff, how do you distinguish the difference between Iran killing their own people versus Russia killing innocent Ukrainians as well as their own people? And how do we turn a blind eye to one and not pursue the other? I don't think that Russia is a threat to Western Europe, to Eastern Europe, Western Europe. I think that Iran, the reason why the military response was so different is that Iran, at least we were told, but it's perceived to be a bigger threat to global stability than Russia. Russia, you can deal with, you can work with. They don't always come out with the outcome you would like. With a theocratic regime in Iran that is motivated by religion, that is motivated by this Middle Ages orthodoxy, that you have to take a stronger approach. Now, this is just me spitballing here, but that's why I think you could nip it in the bud with Iran more so than you could Moscow and Vladimir Putin. They're just two different adversaries with different resources and different levels of communication, different motivations. Like, Vladimir Putin wants to restore the glory to Mother Russia, and Iran wants a global caliphate. Jeff, does anyone remember the American Jewish journalist who was beheaded? I think he worked for the Wall Street Journal. Why does our culture have such a memory deficit? Was it that ISIS, though, right? Freelance journalist, I don't remember his name. But that gets back to the whole, these are people with different beliefs that are far different from us. It's a different motivation. It's a different culture. Fire Dog, you forget about the Israeli plot to activate mind control virus via 5G. That's why I have my tinfoil hat on to block the signals. Well, you're doing a good job there. Mike, the logical conclusion of this line of reasoning that approves the Iran attacks is that the strike around the globe is justified because the target might one day reach a point where a strike can be justified. I'm not upset with you. I'm just a little surprised you're pretty close to me on Iran incursion. Also, what I'm shocked and surprised about is how many people have jumped both feet into the John Brennan neocon space, are constantly cheering on the attacks when one of the first locations to be hit was a girls' grade school. 168 reported children were attending school and killed because it was a mission-critical target designated by our friends in Israel. I don't know. You're clearly an Israel skeptic. You come at it from that side. There's a lot of people out there who think, you know what, this is a war effort. We need to rally behind this president. He's our president. We elected him, and we need to have his back. And this kind of discussion about being critical or skeptical of any military strike is or works against the system. There are people listening to my voice right now who really believe that talking in a critical way about what Donald Trump has done is just way out of bounds. Be dark. Jeff, folks don't work for you, but with you. No, they worked. I'm their boss. When something's messed up, I take the blame. Trust me. I'm the editor-in-chief of 1819, and I am the Breitbart TV editor. So I am the last set of eyeballs on a lot of content that makes it up on the site. If something's wrong, I answer for it. So, yeah, they do work for me. I hire them. Killer bees. So why was the Mossad planting explosives in Saudi Arabia and Yemen? Remember the USS Liberty. Our boys keep dying for Israel. Sid Barron, and see how quickly Trump tells Netanyahu to fight his own war. I'm not convinced this is all for Israel. I think Israel is certainly on board with it. But there may be economic reasons here that go beyond just the existence of Israel. Chris, Hey, Jeff, if 20% of the world's oil goes through the Straits of Hormuz, what percentage of that is to the United States? That's a fair question, but just this is why I keep talking about how oil is a global commodity. The price of a barrel of oil right now is the same globally. So you go to market to buy oil to refine it. You're paying that price, typically, something in that neighborhood or whatever. When you're trading it, when you're buying it, you're buying the futures, it's traded on a global basis, on a global price. So whether that oil is used in India, in Brazil, in China, wherever it's used, doesn't matter. It's bought sort of on the same platform. Should we do it that way? I don't know, but that's just the way that it is, and that's why this matters. Joel, I'm curious to ask the other side, which is the left. What's your language? I'm just skipping this. I can't police myself and Joel. Regarding that school that was hit by a missile, it was an Iranian missile that malfunctioned. They shot themselves. Well, there you have it. They shot themselves. I don't know. I wasn't necessarily keeping up with that. But Iranian-friendly fire. And here's the thing, Mike. Some of these things, some of these instances where it looks like that there was innocents targeted by the United States' propaganda. The Middle East is notorious for this. They really, really use it in Gaza against the Israelis where they'll show something that was not necessarily Israel's fault, but to blame Israel. And, they use it for propaganda. Don't be a sucker for that. Know that this happens. If something backfires and causes some civilians to die, they're going to make the most of it. They're going to try to make the most of it. Through their allies in the media, the BBC types and the others that are easily swayed to blame Israel when the opportunity presents itself. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Show it up and talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Will Hampson coming up in the next hour, so please stick around for that. Be dark. Jeff, I can tell you are an editor. Get a job with CNN. You won't speak reality. It's God and country. CNN would never hire me. Fox News wouldn't even hire me. That Breitbart wing of the party is... or of the conservative media, something I live with. So, people do go to work there at CNN, and they evolve. The one I am most impressed with, she brought up CNN, Scott Jennings seems to kind of be holding his own. But they hire their talent. The talent they have that hosts their shows is... You got to check some boxes, not just politically, but in some other areas as well, and just not something that I am capable of doing. Mike, I know both sides deal in tons of propaganda, but it's not debatable that a girls' grade school was of the day one targets, and tons of little girls' dead bodies were pulled out of the rubble of the building designated to be hit by Israel. Well, I don't know what you're reading, Mike, and I'll say this, I just be careful not to buy into that. Let's just say this, we are Americans, and this is an American event. And the anti-war left have always had problems with. You don't have to go into this just blindly supporting whatever you're told to support. That would be un-American. But sometimes when you see stuff like this, at least ask questions and don't point fingers. We tend to do that, but that's what the left does a lot of times. I'm sure as the war drags on, it won't take you putting this on the FM Talk 106.5 text line. It'll just be top of the page, above the full New York Times, top of the hour news on MS Now. And a texture, I definitely think we need to have our presidents back. It's actually about world terrorism. The whole world will benefit from knocking out the regime, and they have brought this on themselves. Iran was a free country before the Ayatollah came into power. Well, here's what you think about, though. How does the Ayatollah come into power? We were propping up the Shah before the Ayatollah. And there was clear anger with that arrangement. That's what led to the downfall of that regime and this regime we've been dealing with for the last 40 years. I mean, you really got to go back to the Iran hostage crisis. Does it justify it? It doesn't make it right. But it does. We should ask why or how this happened in the first place. 251-343-0106. Get to more of your texts later. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Mona tried to tell me to stay away from the train line. She said that all the railroad men just drink up your blood like wine.
Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three is underway. Cut up here in about 30 minutes from now. Will Hampson, my friend, P2 Public Affairs, he's a vice president there. Formerly worked for Jeff Sessions on his campaign when he ran for U.S. Senate. Mo Brooks prior to that, or no, after that. But he's been around. He knows the state well and is now Washington, D.C. Also worked for Nancy Mace. Did y'all see that dust up with Nancy Mace and Hillary Clinton? Rick Scott for a little while, but now has gone into the public affairs sector, which is very big in Washington and D.C. Text line 251-343-0106. We'll go through some headlines here, and we'll get to your text here in just a moment. I'd say this first up, the Iran is everything. There's some, I'm curious, I guess they're going to force some kind of vote on war powers or resolution. Does that win the day for Democrats? Look, you guys probably would say no, but the Democratic base in this country, whatever you think of Iran, I'll tell you this, there's one reality. They're not going to side with anything Trump does. If he stops bombing Iran, it's going to be too soon. If he bombs Iran more, it's going to be too much. There's nothing making those people happy. That's what we have to grapple with here. And that's what you're going to hear a lot of oxygen dedicated to, is that kind of a vote. And who knows, like, if they'll be able to pull that off, but they're going to make a lot of noise. Here back at home, everybody in our delegation seems to be somewhat on board. The two Democrats, Terry Sewell, Shamari Figures, they gave kind of a half-hearted statement applauding the downfall of the Ayatollah, but insist that what the president is doing requires congressional approval. Let's see. Obviously, I just brought up the Epstein deposition. They released some of the videos. I have not watched the videos, but I've heard some of the reporting. A lot of Lauren Boebert. A lot of back and forth there. But that doesn't seem to... Are you guys thinking about this Epstein saga quite as much right now? Is that on your radar? I mean, for a lot of you, it seemed to be one very, very important focus. But however, the it seems like it's died down a little. Comer, my guess, trying to make some headlines, but it's just that the headlines will be clickable, stories potentially readable, but it is not the media press cycle, news cycle to try to strike a blow there against Bill and Hillary Clinton. And then also, elections are underway in Alabama, and we are hearing from these candidates. We haven't seen a poll as of late, but my belief is everything is kind of status quo. The Trump endorsement matters. Barry Moore is the front runner with Steve Marshall probably nipping at his heels, but Barry Moore is a real opportunity here to build a bigger lead over time. I think the more you're starting to see his ads run, pointing out that he is the Trump guy. So that one, we already know where the gubernatorial election is going after the failed ballot challenges. Tommy Tuberville. Lieutenant Governor's interesting. There is an interesting back and forth between Wes Allen and John Wall. Turns out, we found out this from filings, that to the sum of $20,000, Wes Allen tried to get John Wall removed from the ballot. They hired a law firm. They had people in places trying to set up a narrative. It failed in steering committee. My understanding, it was a very tight vote. But the effort to remove John Wall from the Republican ballot was a kind of weird look for the Republican Party to take the guy who was chairman 3 weeks earlier of the party off of the ballot. But he survived that. He's going to be on the May 19th ballot. I don't have a sense of that race yet. I haven't seen polling. I got to think that Donald Trump coming out of the blue to encourage John Wall to run, he announces, gets that endorsement, is going to mean something in the long run. We'll see some ads, and you have a lot of undecideds, especially this guy's. If Trump cuts some kind of ad for John Wall, if it's just a telephone call or anything, and that gets airtime, and that's going to move the needle. But Wes Allen has some name IDs, a statewide elected official, who's Secretary of State. So he's not out of this. But one headline that was very, very intriguing was that $20,000 that Wes Allen's campaign spent on trying to have an opponent moved from the ballot. That's how the game is played. I bet you didn't know that. You probably did, but the before you even have the opportunity to vote, there are people trying to figure out ways to keep that from even making the ballot. 251-343-0106. Just a few here. You people are giving Trump the same power the Iranian regime has, so what's the difference? Don't think that is accurate. Haywood, surfing the surface as to why the Shah was deposed. His regime may have been West friendly, but he was ruthless to the people. The revolution was a coalition of different groups. Their only commonality was Shah bad. The theocrats coalesced power and removed others while being ruthless to the people. Yes, I mean, I'm not intentionally omitting that the Shah was bad, that he ruled with an iron fist, but we did have to prop him up. And, you know, sometimes that's just the only way you have, especially in a country like that, where you have civility, where you don't have this public distress. Look at Iraq post Saddam Hussein. Look at Libya post Gaddafi. The reason you had these strong-armed dictators in the Middle East is sometimes that's just what is required to maintain law and order. I'm not saying that it's ideal, but you had these tribal countries spread out, and you organize a power structure that requires force. That requires that. To me, that's, you know, keeping that in mind is the problem with deposing these dictators and then expecting democracy to break out. It's just it's culturally it's a big ask. Be dark. If CNN or Fox were to hire you, would you sell your soul to them for a dollar? A, they don't pay a lot. Well, I don't know about CNN. CNN probably does. Fox does not pay. The word on the street about Fox News, if you take a job with Fox News, is your salary is the honor and privilege of working for Fox News. I don't reveal too much here, but I was approached about a Fox job probably about 8-9 years ago. Was being a writer for Hannity's TV show. The problem is they want you to live in New York City. It's very expensive. It's just not a place to raise a family. It's a young man's game in that world. And you do sell your soul. You're hired for a specific job. So Hannity does these long monologues, and it takes a staff to put together these monologues. He does them on radio, if you've ever heard his radio show before. But he does them on his TV show. And then they need writers. They need people writing the script. It takes research. You want to get it right. You want to get the talking points out there. But they wanted somebody there in New York City. And that was kind of it, you know. And thanks, but no thanks. Would I sell my soul? I don't know. The jobs I have taken, typically, not 100%, but I'm in line with the beliefs of the company. I would never go work for the Huffington Post. They wouldn't hire me. They just wouldn't. I wouldn't be a candidate. But what you hear on this radio show, it's not Sean Sullivan pre-programming me. It's not, I'm not getting paid by anybody to, I don't, you know, radio is a little secret. It's not, you know, you're not going to be a millionaire hosting a radio show. But I you know, what you get, what you see is what you get. There's no advertisers. There's no gambling interest here. Just, you're getting straight up my insights and opinions on stuff. You may not like them, but that's what they are. It's not AstroTurf. 32,000 protesters in Iran killed by radical cleric leadership. Radical clerics killed by U.S. Israeli operations. America protests the killing of protester killers only in America. Well, it's all internal politics. It's power. They're protesting the war. They're protesting an out-of-control Donald Trump. He's an authoritarian. We would never have another election in the history of the country if you elect Donald Trump. Remember that? Remember all that? The days before the election? They threw everything they had at Donald Trump. They lost. We didn't get fascism in America. You don't have that. This hyper-emotional reaction was turned out not to be based on any sort of reality. It was just that. Democrats didn't want Trump to be president again. Some of it's personal. A lot of it is personal, in fact. That's what I would say. It's just Nancy Pelosi got her butt handed to her. She thought she had solved it all, that Trump would never be president again after the 2020 election, after January 6th, the high holy day for Democrats in America. And they lost. It turned out no one cared. It turned out that wasn't a deal breaker for the country, because what we saw, in fact, was Donald Trump had the biggest vote total, won the popular vote for the first time in 20 years. And Democrats still don't seem to be too willing to acknowledge that and the reality they have to deal with. I think maybe it won't matter as much in the midterms, but it's going to matter going forward. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I'm Jeff Davis.
It's where I drank my first beer. It's where I found Jesus. Where I wrecked my first car. I tore it all to pieces. I learned the path to heaven. It's full of sinners and believers. Learned that happiness on earth ain't just...
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Programming note will be up in Montgomery. I know I'll have Joey Clark on from News Talk 93.1 to kick off the program tomorrow. And at some point, we'll have the lieutenant governor. I got to try to get a few lawmakers in there. There's a lot going on in the legislature. It warrants discussion. It may not be in front of everyone's mind, but we're going to keep on keeping on with the discussion there, what's going on in Alabama politics. We'll get through these texts real quick before we get to our next guest. Will Hampson coming up here shortly. So he doesn't need congressional approval. That's how it works. Well, he has 60 days before he has to go seek congressional approval. I think that was something that stems from 9/11. I don't know the rules or the law precisely, but I know that a president can act without seeking congressional approval immediately. That's how it works. You don't like it, get them to change the law. Ultra Runner, we value your insight and above all your honesty. That's why we listen. Most of us agree with you most of the time. When we don't, well, then that's where things get interesting. You're not getting paid for opinions here. If anybody wants to try to pay me for an opinion, well, yeah, I guess you could try. B-Dark, it's worth a fortune just to torment you and get free airtime. We do it out of love for the game, B-Dark. Fire Dog, the Shah was overthrown for his views on women's rights. Women were allowed to vote and hold public office, expanded rights for divorce. The enraged Muslim hardliners after 1979, women were reduced to property again. I think it was a bunch of different reasons. We put a lot of stock in the Iranian regime then, though. In the world, a weak president with Carter didn't have his eye on the ball. And you think about that. We were, from that point, we didn't spend as much time on these Middle East discussions. It was all Cold War. Soviet Union, nuclear holocaust. That was where American foreign policy was focused. It was on the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. That was the threat. There were, yes, obviously, the Middle East doesn't need to be taken lightly, but I think a lot of people woke up to it after the Iran hostage crisis. And then you had the prolonged Iran-Iraq war. Then they came to an agreement. And then I guess Iraq said, well, we need something to do. Let's go invade Kuwait. And that was after the Cold War, you know, basically it ended. And we became a country with a foreign policy view that was very centered around the Middle East. What does the world look like if Iran isn't funding Hezbollah and Hamas anymore? What are our obligations with the Israelis if that threat is deterred? And so that's a worthy discussion. If you take away these proxies that the Iranians have been using because Iran is no longer of value or of assistance to these guys, does that take some of the burden off the United States? And if so, then this is a legitimate thing we're doing. And I think that has to figure into the calculus. It absolutely does. If you don't have to worry about Hamas ginning up resentment toward Israelis, smuggling weapons and munitions in, because Iran is out of commission, the regime, does that take a burn off the U.S. when it comes to Israel and protecting Israel? And I would argue it probably does in the long run. Let's get a break here. I'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Themselves and their slow moving.